Yes, and a big good morning and welcome to This Is Your Racing Life. And I've really looked forward to this particular episode of our program, and that's to have a chat with Greg Hall. It's been a while. Gee, how are you?
How are you, BM? Thank you, mate. Yeah, it has been a while, mate. We've done plenty over the years, and it's been quite a while, but it's good to be back in the studio with you.
How are you travelling?
Good, good. Things are looking up. Things are good. You know, I've done the ad with the TAB. Getting plenty of flack out of it, you know, everywhere I go now. Greg Hall, I'm a fan of yours.
waiting for that bloke to jump the counter and kiss you.
Well, he wasn't far off, was he? But I'll always love you. God, geez, there's a few out there that don't.
Greg, you've had an illustrious career, 49 Group 1 wins. You've been a hellraiser, and you've probably been to hell and back as well in your life, and we'll get to that shortly. Tell me about last Saturday. Your boy, Nicholas, won his second Caulfield Cup on the favourite Jamaica. What was it like as a dad?
You know, it was funny, BM, that I hadn't been to the Caulfield Cup. The last time I went is when he went on Faulkner, and that was a story in itself. For some reason, even though he was $10, $12, $14 or something, I woke up. But I don't get to the races a lot now unless I'm doing marquees or something like that. Yeah. And I said, it was like a bolt from heaven, gone, you got to go. And he went on Faulkner, you know, and I gave him a big kiss, and it was all over the papers and that. And but Saturday was probably bigger because I was mindful that it's about Nick, you know, and it's hard as a dad, and I could imagine what he's going through, because I went through with my dad, if you're half as good as your old man, son, you'll be all right and all that. And so it was his day, and but I was there with Rhonda, and I was so proud. And he's just a great, great jockey, not just because he's my boy, but his family background, and goes back for nearly 100 years now, 97 years, you know. Granddad, and he trained in India, and he's a jockey himself, and BV, and Uncle Joe, and my dad Ronnie, and there was four boys and five girls. The four boys were jockeys, and five girls married jockeys, and my brother was a jockey, and his son was a jockey, and I'm the youngest of three, and I was a jockey, and now Nicholas is a jockey, and for 97 years, not one year's gone by where a hall hasn't rode. And I just think that's, you never think of it when you're riding it, but now I've retired, and I think that's extraordinary, you know. And it just goes to show how genetical it is, or they're gifted, you know, whether it be the Paynes, or there's several out there, but he's gifted that when he was 17, he was doing year 12, and he asked me to ring up Brother Hanley up at Nudgee College, and I said, everything all right? He said, yeah, I want to be a jockey. Well, I was driving the car, I nearly crashed the car. I said, you what? He said, I want to be a jockey, Dad. And he was only halfway through year 12. And so I spoke to him, and it was quite funny, actually. And so I had to sort of give him permission to get out. And it was just an extraordinary, he hadn't been in the races, he hadn't rode any horses, and took him up to Gerald Egan's. And I remember my stepmother and my stepsister, Honey, they sent me an article not a few years ago, and Dad back in the days, he said, Greg will be the best of them all. Well, it's great to be able to pass this on, that Nicky will be the best hall of them all. And then, you know, we all had our generations, whether it was old Knack, as they called him, Ronnie, and all that. You remember the old man, the shot, and me brother riding Handy Lou. And it's just it brings a tear to my eye that, remember when I took the Nick up to Gerald Egan's the first morning, he put the saddle on backwards, and the girl said the other way, Nick, you know. And but he's just a natural, and it's in the, look, so proud that the hall will carry on. And that I just wish he'd hurry up and get married and that, so he gets one more coming along before he retires.
The dynasty continues, yeah. Exactly. Now, he's 29 now?
Yes.
That's amazing, because I remember him as a little tacker, you know, when I'd come around to maybe pick you up to take you to a function at a sports night or a speaking engagement, Beaver Street, Malvern, I reckon it would have been. He'd be standing there at the doorway with his little sister and Kim, your wife, and there was that little guy, and I thought, I wonder, you know, will he ever follow in your footsteps? I hope he doesn't in many ways, but he has, and he's carved out his own niche.
Yeah, it's just quite extraordinary. But I never stop thinking about it now, and I'm so proud. I'm so happy and proud for him, and he works hard, and he's, you know, and you can speak to a lot of people, BM, especially a guy like yourself. Have your own opinion. The Barry Longs, the Robert Smurdens, the great old people in racing, and they say he's, you know, he's. It's not just on the track, but when he comes, when he gets off the track, and his report back to the horses, whether you own Phil's Omar, what did they say? He's just a natural at letting trainers know what it needs to do and what should happen, and so that's a gift. BM, that's not something you can buy or something you can train into someone. That's a gift from our family or a gift from God or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about Nick Hall, of course, dual Caulfield Cup winning jockey. He had problems with injuries, and he's not a lightweight. You were never a lightweight rider, or you might have been initially, but he was sort of his designated weight over the last couple of years. Looks as though it was around 55. Would that be about right?
Yeah. I remember walking out of the valley when I first brought him down from Gerald Egan's and introduced him to Robert Smurden, and he wasn't riding that day. I just took him to the race, and we're walking out, and Robert said, and we had our arm around each other, and he said to one of his colleagues, Robert, he said, have a look at them too. He said, they're a clone, like he's same build as me, and which is a great thing that the genetics, it's just says it all, you know. Yeah.
He looks as though Nick may have a date with destiny if this mare can win the double, and there's no reason why she can't. She still hasn't got the weight that can stop her, I don't think. Can she run out 3,200 Jamaica? You looked at Saturday. She had a bit in the tank at the end.
She did. It was interesting, BM, that, you know, she shook her head going out of the straight and then again up the hill at the 1,400 and that, and I was a bit worried and going thinking they don't win races doing that. But it was very interesting that Karen Maher had been asked several times about that, and it was interesting to note that she can do that, but she's not losing any energy and all that. So the unknown is the 3,200. I suppose that's the case with Hartnell too, but and the internationals won't have a problem, but... I'm going to ask you a question now, BM. I wonder how many father and sons have won the Melbourne Cup combination.
Yeah, that's true. No, that you got me thinking now, but I'll find out the answer.
I know you'll find out now, yeah.
That's interesting.
That would be not just Nick's greatest time, but be the whole lot of my life, you know. And I have a lot of people come up to me, BM, and they go, oh, your son's better than you, blah, 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 and sort of pie having a crack at me. And I go, look, I hope he wins 10 Melbourne Cups. You know, he's my boy, and that's what I wanted, you know. And I don't think there'd be many father and sons that have won the Melbourne Cup. Yeah.
Well, let's hope it can happen, mate.
Do you think he can?
Oh, yeah, she's got a great chance. Yeah. Great chance. The trip? Different ball game. Well, she's been out to the Oaks trip, which is not... quite the 32. She's run the 25. There's no reason. Like, it's unknown territory, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, you know. But history says it's very doable, as we know. Let's Elope and...
Ethereal.
Ethereal, yeah.
I think she's as good as Ethereal. I don't think she's at Let's Elope's degree yet, but I think she's every bit as good as Ethereal.
She's got a remember a mare I rode, BM Champagne. You know, I won the McKinnon Stakes on her, and I couldn't ride her 2 days later in the Melbourne Cup because I was on Doremus. But she ran second to
Jezebel.
Jezebel,
yeah.
And she had a turn of foot like it was unbelievable. You know, possibly she might have went a bit early, and like she did break 33 her last three and that. So. No disrespect to Glenn, but I think this...
There's a phone call.
Yeah, there is indeed. We'll turn that off. Looking at her sad day, though, she's got a turn of foot that's quite scary, actually. Yeah. You know, when she come up, loomed up three deep, and then...
At the home turn, when she went up to that leader, the Scottish, and she was cantering.
Yeah.
There was no betting on the turn because the others were 3 to 4 lengths back. Scottish had worked, so she only had to stand up from the turn to win.
Yeah, and she when he pushed the button and she let down, she flattens out beautiful, you know, and she's got a brilliant turn of foot, which you need these days in the Melbourne Cup. You know, days are gone of the Think Bigs and the Sub-Zeros and all that, you know. It's all changed, as you and I know.
Did he get fined for standing up in the irons? Because he, I would say, history will now record that Nick Hall was as high as any jockey's ever been at the winning post, waving to the crowd or punching the air. It's extraordinary.
Yes, he made Glenn Boss and Jay Mack look like schoolboys. Yes. He went right over the top, but he's good at that. He's a good athlete and he's good balance. Yeah, he got fined $1,000, but on that, you know, Brian, I'm not sure about that because these blokes know what they're doing. You know, they don't do silly things, and I don't know what the rule is. You know, back in my time, you probably would have got a month's suspension or whatever if you'd done that, let alone a fine.
But I think it's the safety aspect.
Yeah, that, I understand.
You can slip out of the saddle and bring the field down over the top of you. But the stewards say, my reckoning is the stewards say, you can celebrate after the line. Well, something could still happen after the line too, couldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's the emotion, you know, you're running on adrenaline.
They're on adrenaline and it's their grand final, whether it's Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate, Melbourne Cup. Times have changed. It brings a bit of theatre. They know what they're doing. They're horsemen. They're not idiots, you know. They understand that. And
now, you have to lose probably 3 to 3.5 kilos to take that ride. Did you mentor him about that because you've been in that position before?
No. I must admit, other than taking him up to Gerald's in that BM, you know, father and son combination in any industry, whether it's back in the days of Philippoussis or... the girl that played tennis and the father and
just fill our listeners in on Gerald Egan.
Well, when he came out as Nudgee College, I actually went and seen Pat Carey first. I spoke to my brother Ronnie about it, and we went and seen Pat Carey, and Pat
was a trainer,
and he was managing and running out of John Maher's place up at Sunbury there, and he suggested to me Gerald. And my brother as well. So, and I've known Gerald for a long time. He used to take me up the high country back in the day and had a bit of fun and that with him, not that I rode for him. And
he was a stunt rider and the man from Snowy River, wasn't
he? He was. It wasn't Tom, don't worry about that. I think Tom was having a champagne watching Gerald go.
Tommy
down
Burlinson,
there.
Yeah.
I think Gerald was the one that done all the hard yards, horses galloping over him, jumping over out of corrals and that with no bridle and all that. And Tommy Burleson got all the credit, but so when we, and Gerald's very good with kids, you know, he had, I forget the great jump jockey he had, he started off as an apprentice, but then he had Luke Nolan, and the thing was, is I was very mindful, I could have put him with Bart, Lee, Sir Michael Stout, because we lived in Dubai, and I had connection with Frankie Dettori in England and all that, and there was no problem about me putting him anywhere, but the thing, I was very mindful about what I'd been through with my dad. You know, if you're half as good as Knackers, meaning Ronnie Hall, you know, you'll do all right, son. And it's not easy trying to fill those boots. It played on me a bit. And I was very mindful that, and I watched Biebman's kid. As well, and you know, as a young bloke, and Darren's a good friend of mine, his young son was on Sky Channel in a beautiful suit when he was 16, and I was so mindful about, I don't want him in the limelight, I don't want him in the press.
Yeah.
So we took him up.
Leave him alone a bit.
Took him up to the man from Snowy River, Gerald, and he learnt how to drive tractors and trucks and rakes and do the, you know, not so much hard yards, but rode ponies, and we used to go and jump them, and you know, as soon as he finished work, we'd get, he's got two beautiful stock horses there, and Nick and I go out and jump them over creeks and hurdles and all that. So it kept him out of the limelight, albeit that he rode 190 winners his first 2 years and that, and he didn't have his first ride in town for 2 years, and his first ride in town, there's only one other bloke done it, was a man called, that wasn't too bad at it, called Harry White.
Yeah.
And we walked the track at Caulfield and for Quinny Scott, and his first ride in town was at Caulfield, and he won on it.
Yes, I remember that well.
So it was very, very, very important that he wasn't going to get driven mad by the press, you know, the son of Greg Hall and this, that and the other, whereas you know, in a bigger stable and all that, that can happen, you know.
We're talking with Greg Hall. This is Your Racing Life. He's had an incredible life in racing, and we'll be back after this break. For Toten Brothers Funerals, celebrating life. Back with Greg Hall. This is Your Racing Life. Now, Greg, your time starting out as an apprentice jockey, you had seven different trainers that you're apprenticed to, including your father.
I was waiting for you to bring this up, mate. Thanks for this, mate.
Now, tell me about this. You didn't see your mother for 12 years after your dad, Ron, stole you from home when you were only two. Mm. You were selling papers at the front of Young and Jackson's at 11. Mm. You were left to roam the streets at a very young age. How did you survive all that?
Well, you know, there was Ronald, Lauren and me in that order, and I was the youngest, and Dad were born in Adelaide, and Dad drove them two back in a Volkswagen. And I was put on a plane, being only 2 years of age, and he had a mate of his pick me up at the other end. It was old Mick Sayers that was used to be a bagman for a bookie.
The gangster?
No, his son was the gangster, young Michael. Yeah. Eventually, that's another story, but... I forget the bookie. You'd know the bookie real well that he worked for. I can't think now. But anyway, so Mick picks me up at the other end. This is the story. I'm two, right? Thank God he did, because it would have been pretty hard to catch a cab at Essendon Airport at 2 years of age, right? So I used to call him Uncle Mick and his wife Auntie Janet, and Dad was good mates with him. And so it started there, and then I ended up at Jacoota Lodge when I was eight. And yes, I had seven different bosses. It was quite funny, actually. Jack Purtell and Mr. Burns in those days were the apprentice people, and in the end, you know, I was with Tony Lopes, and then Dad was up in Queensland training, and Uncle Brian would take me in, or Dad would take me in, and they'd go, oh, where's he going now? And I was a bit fortunate, actually, because back in those days, they had a thing called, you might be able to remind me here, Bri, when kids were a bit, you know, I was a beautiful kid, but I was a bit
you're a bugger,
a bit of a little bugger, you know. Yeah, that's a nice word, a bit of a little bugger, you know. And but I was lucky with Tony Lopes and Dad and the Halls, whoever it was, that because you could get not steward's pleasure. It was like they'd stand you down, and it wasn't easy to go from trainer to trainer. So in the end, I ended up with Dad up at Queensland and...
via New South Wales, via Sydney as well.
Yeah, I went to Theo Jacobson in Sydney and I was apprenticed to Tony Lopes here and, well, there's a few others. Oh, Mr. Jim Morgan from Sale. Yeah. And then we had older BB and Pat Hyland. Yeah, I was apprenticed there, and I was apprenticed at Yarra Glen to Arch McClements and...
Poor old Arch wouldn't know what hit him, would he?
What do you have here to... You know, he had a beautiful horse once. Jimmy Parr used to ride it, who's passed away. Yeah. And Billy Vaines, he was another one of Flemington. Billy Vaines, yeah, I remember that. He'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was funny, his wife used to have 19 cats. We slept in the stables, the feed room. It was decked out with a fire and lounge suite. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, we'd have to get up and she'd make a bit of burnt toast and give us a little jar of cottage jam, you know, the tiny one, and I used to say, "Jesus, this is a bit tough, Mum." You know, she said, "It's tougher where there's none, son." And that was breakfast at 2 a.m. Then we go to work all day, and they were good.
What was that stable life like? Like, I mean, that seems to be light years ago now. How tough was that?
It's very tough, BM. It was very tough. You don't sort of look at it when you've now been retired for 15 odd years. You look back at it now and you go, well, was that really, like, it wouldn't happen now, you know?
No.
You know, there was initiations and, you know, and hardly get a feed and, you know, and yet there was some other people different, like Tony Lopes. You were getting three meals a day, and I used to get $5 a week and half a Sunday off every second Sunday and in the afternoon, but you're always up early. And Friday nights, if you had a runner, you'd have to sleep out in the front of the horse's box and with a canvas rug on you and all that. And this is before I was riding, and strap your horse and muck out 10 or 12 boxes and And you know, at the end, I was still getting $5. You know, I was an apprentice when I was 14 for 7 years till I was 21, because that was the way it worked then. And but I wouldn't change it. I loved it. That's all I wanted to do. You know, I wagged school. I used to then pinch ponies when I was up at Mildura, the Jack Castleman's, when my dad sent me up to Mildura there, and because Dad couldn't not so much provide, but he was riding. He couldn't look after the three of us, and we'd all be shifted round. And I went from Jakarta Lodge when I was eight up to Mildura on a houseboat, and called them uncle and auntie, which they weren't, but they were like that to me. Went to Merbein State School, and he had a butcher shop. And then the best years of my life, I'd come home from school and throw a line in, and then, you know, see Dad 3 or 4 years later or whatever. And he might come up every now and again. And then Jack Castleman, you know, I'd go down to the track there and wag school, and I'd go and pinch his pony. He goes, "Oh, that little bugger Hall, he's taken this pony again," and I wouldn't come back all day. And and then I was at Bacchus Marsh, you know, yeah, before I was riding. Dad was training. I'd ride a pony to school, and I'd never the wrought iron gates, and then I'd go 100 mile an hour, and the old man used to think it was so good, you know, I wouldn't open the gate. If I hit that, I wouldn't do it now for $1 million, but I used to just jump the gate and then ride down to school, which was about 6 or 7 miles, and tie the pony up in the footy ground and watch all these young kids try and ride her bareback, and she'd throw them to the what else, and then ride back home. And yeah.
You finished up your apprenticeship up with your dad in Queensland, and the first of the Group 1s came along in 78, I think it was, with Innisfree. Big win. Huge win for you.
It was, mate. He was 40-1, and he was a big horse, you know. And, you know, you're talking, in those days, I was pretty light, you know. And he was a massive horse. But I will say this, if you watch the race, Brian, I think I look back now, but it's such a, not at the time, but to think back, your first Group 1 winner, yeah, for your father, you know, how good's that? Dad's up in heaven now, so he'd be listening to this. But I think the horse won it more than me. He just got back and he guided me. Those days they had 18 runners, man. He just guided me through, and it looked like I was going to fall off the stretcher at 1 minute, but he ended up winning at 40-1. And it's funny you say that, and then you look back at me old mate, still a great friend of mine, Mick Dittman. He never won one, you know. Yeah, and he was the king of Queensland, so yeah.
The Group 1s are the ones you want to win, and, you know, your career is studded with wonderful horses. You know, we will talk about Sub-Zero in a moment, because that's part of folklore, as we know. But, you know, terrific gallopers like Zetative, and one of my favourites, Mahogany. Like, he won 8 Group 1s. He never gets the credit, Mahogany, for what he achieved. 2 Lightning Stakes, Derbies, Guineas, he could win from 1,000 metres to 2,500.
Castlemaine's.
And of course, yeah, 2 wins at Group 1 up in Queensland.
Goes, 2
yeah.
Lightnings.
Yeah, just extraordinary. And arguably should have gone very close to winning the Cox Plate and Octagonals year in 95. I think he gave 9.5 kilos to Octagonal, who only passed away last Saturday.
Yes.
And you gave him a peach of a ride, but the weight's just got you.
Yeah, it was probably... I remember Lloyd Williams coming down from the stand, which is a big effort for a man that's on the committee, and it's very busy that day, as it's going to be today, as we know, at the Cox Plate. But he said, "You'll never ride a better race in your life again, Greggy, the race you rode." Then he drew 12 and I had him 5th on the fence. And you look back and, you know, I've been lucky that I've won a Cox Plate and I've won a Melbourne Cup, and I've run 2nd twice in the Cox Plate and I've run 2nd in the Melbourne Cup. But it probably was my best ride. And then you get, you know, you look back and watch the replay, and Octagonal, you called it, he's 3 deep last, no cover, 10 kilos, 9.5 kilos difference, and it was a bob of the heads. But I always look back, you know, a lot of people say to me, "Oh, you're the bloke that got beat on Doremus," and you're waving and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I had you convinced.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you won, I was going to break your arm.
I had you
yeah,
convinced. Yeah. Plus 100,000 people thought I won. But but the good, now, like I said, retiring all that, I look at it, well, what kid in the world, how much would they give, let alone their right arm, A, to win a Melbourne Cup, and then get beat on one. Two champions, Might and Power, De Remus.
Yeah.
Two champion jockeys, Jimmy Cassidy, Greg Hall. I look at it like, how good's that? You can't beat it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way. At the time, you wouldn't have felt that way because it was disappointing.
Of course. But I look back now and I go, geez, mate, you know, George Moore, Scobie Breasley, the list can go on. Blokes would have, I remember Scobie before he passed away, he said he'd give it all back to win a Melbourne Cup, yeah. You know, and he rode with my dad and that, you know. So it's just a beautiful day, and the best part is it's never forgotten. I'm the mug that was waving my hand around that. But that's what a good sportsman I was being. I was saying well done to Jimmy.
I bet you a story to that, actually. Yeah.
Jimmy comes back. There was a bit of rivalry in those days, even though we're best mates and that now. He comes back in, and Jimmy's quite small to me, and I'm a boy that's been brought up at Jacuta Lodge in Flemington. It's my stamping ground. And he goes, "Oh, geez," and I got you. He doesn't talk as deep as me, BM, you know. I said, "Did you, Jimmy?" I said, "Mate, you can only drink out of one cup," meaning the Melbourne Cup, which we both had one. I said, "And you can only eat off one plate," meaning a Cox plate, which we both had one. And I said, "But you've either got a cold foot or you walk around with a limp." All the boys are listening, you know, because I can be quite loud. And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, mate, you've only got one slipper." I said, "Who walks around with one slipper?" I said, "You ever got a cold foot or a limp?" I said, "I've got two." I said, "No one goes to the shop and buys one slipper."
Two golden slippers.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you'd cop that all right too, I'm sure.
The happiest bloke, BM, to ever lose a Melbourne Cup, put it that way.
Yeah, that would have come out later, yeah. Yeah. What about Zetative? What a horse he was. Trained by Angus Armanasco, who's long gone, but absolute I think he gentleman. Won 10 races as a two-year-old.
Superstar he was. And sadly, in those days, I mean, if you could wind the clock forward these days, a horse like Zetative would bring, who was, in my opinion, was a better horse than Chazoir, and... he brought that sort of big money to the table from the Sheiks and all that. Of Zeta, you'd probably get 30 or 40 million for him. But he only had five starts as a three-year-old, and he won all of them. And then Colin Tidy, the late Colin Tidy, who's passed away, who's a gentleman, and 17 starts, 14 wins. He got offered $2 million for half share, and he had to go to stud. If you'd have, geez, I tell you what, Brian, they had raced on with him. He was a superstar. He would take runs that nobody in the world would go on, and God, he was a great horse, and he had a great trainer, and he was a superstar.
Was it before the Castle Maine where a brick wall fell on him?
Yes, yeah. I was there that morning in Brisbane, and the strapper had him, and he just ran through a brick wall, and that's basically was him in a race. Look, if there was half a run there, I remember Des Gleeson said to me one day, he said, was it Des or Pat? But Pat later, either. And he took a run. He beat Special up the straight, who was a superstar up the straight, as you know.
Held the record for years.
And there was a grey horse from Queensland that Biedman was riding, or Wayne Harris, it was a superstar too. And there was only, like, basically not a run there, but there was a bit of daylight. It takes two to tango. I was never shy of doing it either. And I said, "Colin, we've got to go here." And away we went. I pushed the button, and he just opened them up like a can of pineapple. And Des or Pat grabbed me after the race. He said, "Look, Greg," he said, we like you taking runs," he said, "but you can't make them." And he beat a super... that was the Escobar, actually.
Yeah, I remember the race.
He beat...
Yeah. Special?
No, and the horse of Tommy Smith's that won the Golden Slipper.
Oh, Bounding Away.
No, Larry Olson ride it when Mick Dipman couldn't ride it. He was a superstar, yeah. Yeah, but he was just a great horse to ride. Mm. He suited me anyway, because I rode. He was very, you know, he had a mind of his own. He could easily take charge and run through brick walls. And Turf Ruler was another one, you know, and that sort of kicked me off with Angus, you know, because Harry and Roy didn't want to ride him.
Turf Ruler, there's another story. We're taking this word. This is your racing life. And we'll come back in just a moment and talk to Greg about riding for Kerry Packer. With Greg Hall, this is your racing life. Now, Kerry Packer, Lloyd Williams, two of the biggest owners this racing country has ever seen. Kerry's now moved on, has gone to another life. But tell us about winning on Merlin. You won two golden slippers on Dan Zero and Merlin. But Merlin, there was a tale beyond the tale.
Yeah, there was, but that was another chapter in my life. Meeting Lloyd, who has just, you know, it's well publicised that he's the godfather of Nicholas, and his wife, actually, Susie's the godmother of Cassie, and her son's the godfather of Cassie. And so I met Lloyd, and I actually met Kerry through Lloyd, but that was years down the track. And but it was a great chapter in my life, meeting Lloyd Williams, because I learned a lot about business people and met celebrities you could never think of, and dressed well and well polished, and it was sort of like a second father to me. And but I remember when I first met Kerry, I was going up to Sydney to ride a horse called Major Drive.
Oh, yeah, 87, yeah.
And John Maher trained it, and he won the chairman's handicap, and normally of a Friday I play golf. And Lloyd said, "You better go and meet Mr. Packer. I've heard of him, but I hadn't met him, you know." And so I go up to this building, 88 stories, and hire a car, and which I'm not used to and all that. And anyway, give me a big bag of lollies. And I said, "Oh, Mr. Packer," I said, "you know, Major Drive, I have a good chance tomorrow in the Sydney Cup." And he said, "What are you talking about, son?" He said, "Turn it up, boy." He said, "How's it going to beat my card?" But I'll cut a long story short, BM, as we all know, he had $7 million on the second horse, and I won the race on Major Drive. But yeah, with Merlin, way down the track, 10 years down the track or whatever it was, that become pretty pally with him and call him KP, and he'd still call me boy or son, though he won't relent on that. But and he was a character. He was a lovely bloke, kind man, and albeit tall and boisterous and hard man. And but one thing about Lloyd used to always, they never gave me any instructions. And I mean, I look at it this way, that these people don't employ people that don't know their job, whether it's in the building industry or casino industry or business industry or sporting industry. And they never used to give me any instructions. And with Merlin, when I look back at it, did the crime deserve the time? You know, I mean, 2 months and 50,000 is pretty hefty when three blokes in the race got suspended for careless riding under the same rule. One got 2 weeks, one got 3 weeks, and one got 2 months and 50,000.
Well, that was you, because you knocked them over.
Yeah, yeah.
In winning the Golden Slipper, you had to knock other riders over. Well, not they didn't fall, but no, you ruined their chances.
I didn't ruin their chances. The thing outside me was 330-1. It was, but I had to make a choice. You know, the horse I was following was coming back in front of me, and two other jockeys got suspended for the same careless riding. And I pushed, and it was a chain reaction. Yeah, I deserved to get time, but I don't know if it warranted that, for example, right? And that'll never happen again. But so there may have been a bit of politics involved there, because I remember the late great Jack Ingham come up behind me when he was chairman, and he whispered in my ear and he said, "You're going to get one with the lot here, Greggy." Well, he was right.
Yeah,
I got one with the lot. But I was always a jockey that, and I think Nicholas is very much on the same page. Is Nick goes very quiet over winter and off season and all that. And but I had a thing in me when it come to big races that I used to say to myself, it was a lot of mental stuff with my, I'd say, "I'm going to win this. I know I'm going to." But I had a mindset. And then, and don't forget, BM, you know, it doesn't come without a price. I broke my neck, I broke my back, I done 12 ribs, a punctured lung, one collarbone, two wrists, unconscious 7 times. And so, but you give and take, you know. But I was never a bloke that was fearless. And when it come to big races, I'd go up a different level, you know. And I was a big race player or big game boy, you know. When it come to finals, I had this gene, or I had this thing in me, an adrenaline rush in me, that there wasn't anything I couldn't do in a big race, you know. And even all the seconds in the big race, and I look back at them going, well, that's good. I was competitive.
The stakes were high with people like Lord Williams, but particularly with Kerry Packer and his betting activities. Were you ever promised, you know, what you were going to get if you won this major race?
No, but...
You didn't know what you were going to get?
Didn't know what you were going to get.
When you say a bag of lollies,
yeah,
it wasn't full of lollies.
No, it was like a Schweppes chocolate factory. No.
Dollars.
Yeah, they were big payers, mate. But it was never guaranteed before the race. Like, for example, when the Chairman's Handicap won, I got paid big money out of that, and yet when I won the Sydney Cup, I thought, how big is this going to be? I'd only met the bloke 2 days ago, you know, and I didn't get a dollar. But that's the... And Lloyd was the same. We had a... it wasn't a gentleman's agreement. It was just the way we were. I mean, Lloyd Williams said on the back of my book, you know, Ride the Wind. He said one thing about Greg Hall is he said his loyalty is a second to none. And we were just loyal people. And that's why I had the job with him, because I was loyal. I wouldn't tip. And there was times when I won races and I thought I was going to get big slings and I didn't. And there was times when I didn't think I'd get a good, such a big sling, and they're over the top. So, you know, that's what goes around comes around. So I put it this way, I was well looked after, BM. Don't worry.
Tell us about Sub-Zero. 1992, heavy track, wet ground.
I'll just tell you a quick story with KP. We come Derby Day and we'd known each other for 12 years or whatever, and Lloyd's standing there in the mountain, you know, the VRC Derby with Mahogany, and Kerry's there, and he only comes down for the 2 days, as you know, and Lloyd's the conservative one, and I'm a little jockey, and Kerry's worth 12 billion, you know. And he says, hey, son, he said, what do you reckon? He said, do you think this horse can win? And this is just before we're going to get mount up, yeah. And I said, how much you had on it? I don't know. I didn't even look at Lloyd's, because I thought, oh, much will he cringe here saying this to me. He said, what are you talking about, how much I had on it? He adds a few other words, BM, but I can't say it on air, you know. And he said, what are you talking about, boy? He said, how much have I had on it? I said, well, how much you had on it? He said, I've had 1.6 million on it. Then they said, riders up. I said, why'd you drop your handbag? I said, go and have a decent bet. I said, this will win by a minute. So he went to Lloyd. He said, oh, I like that kid. So he went and had another 3 million on it. It won by 7 lengths.
He had 4.6 million on the horse.
Apparently, yeah.
On Mahogany, it won by, 100
yards.
You
called it.
I remember you looking around at the 300.
And where are they?
Where are they?
Yeah,
Subby,
what a star. I just got sent a book from Adam about him. I'm halfway through it. And, what a superstar. He's a story in himself. I remember he ran second in the St. Ledger and Damien rode him. Not that I was riding for Lee or anything. And he hung in with him, you know. And I get a phone call. I hadn't even had a ride, basically. I had one ride for Lee Friedman, and that didn't go down real well once upon a time, early doors. And he said, hey, Greg, can you use the whip in the left hand? I said, yeah, I'm a champion at it, as I was at everything, BM. Didn't matter whether it was golf or anyone. Anyone asked me, what could I do anything? Yeah, of course I was a champion at it. Yeah, pigs. I won't say what Jack Elliott says. But I said, yeah, I'm a champion at it, Lee. And I was in Adelaide at the time. He said, you can ride this horse called Sub-Zero. Hangs in. He said, yeah, I seen he's running the St. Ledger at Flemington. He said, yeah. And I used to carry it in the left hand on him, and went out for the... And that day at Morphinville, they were winning about 10 off the fence, and I thought, geez, I'm in trouble here, you know. Not that he was any star or anything like that then, anyway, you know. And he won the Derby easy, and I carried it in the left hand, and when I got in the barriers, I put in the right hand, but no one noticed, and... And he comes straight down the middle with me. And we just got on so well. And then he come out, I don't know whether it was 10 days later, he won the Adelaide Cup.
That's right.
I had to lose about 6 or 7 kilos. I think he only had 50 and a half or 51 or something, BM. But and he won well, you know. But in saying that, you know, Adelaide, no disrespect to Adelaide, but, the Derby and the Adelaide Cup doesn't really stamp you as a Melbourne Cup horse, you know.
Not really.
You know. And I'm not saying they haven't done it in the past, but anyway, then I spent the next went out for a spell, and I spent the next 8 months with him, like every day. Yep. And come Melbourne Cup day, I was in the room, you had an extra 30 minutes, you know, waiting, 20 minutes waiting, and Lee said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not used to this wait." And he said, "You'll be right, just go and relax, enjoy it, you know." He said, "You know what you're doing." And a bit of rain come, it wasn't over the top, and he drew 15 and was running 12th, one off the fence, and just spoke to him all the way, and what a dream come true, you know. He gave me the best ride, and, you know, he was just an absolute... And what he's done after racing BM is so...
Fantastic,
it's just,
isn't it?
It's so important. It's just, he's just been a wonderful ambassador, you know. He's taken the limelight off me.
No, he's... I
keep telling him, I say, "Hey, listen, I made you."
He's a legend. Just in closing, it's Cox Plate Day, 1992. Superimposed. That field, people should never forget this, that field had won 27 million between them in 1992.
I didn't know that.
All the Group 1 winners.
Back in those days,
BM. Yeah, 1992. You're back near the tail, there was a fall in front of you, and you're looking for the tennis courts or, you know, to get the cue to, you know, where to take off.
Yeah, well, Lee had three runners, Naturalism, Mannerism, and Super. And Mick Dittman used to sit beside me at Mooney Valley, and he said, "Hey, gee," he said, "don't think this old horse hadn't got any hope," because he won the Canberra Cup on
That's
him or something
right,
just before.
Yep.
And he said, "He's flying." I said, "Oh, okay." So I pepped up a bit because he was 40 to 1 or something, you know, and he was 8 year old before your horse come along. He was the oldest horse to win it. And so that got me G'd up a bit. So I can win this, get me head back and me Group 1 head on going, you know. And Anthony legged me up. And he said, "Oh, yeah, Mac last," and da-da-da. He said, "Don't move to the," what did he say, "the squash courts or something," and which there is none. So, but it was funny the night before because the owner rang me. He said, "Don't listen to the Freemans. I've been watching him for 6 years, this horse, right, and chasing him everywhere." And the owner said to me, "Don't listen to the Freemans." He said, "Have him up on the pace. Can you believe this, BM?" He said, "And he doesn't like the whip."
What?
And I said, "What are you drinking?" It was Friday night, and I hung up on him. So I was back near last, and there was a fall, and there was no squash courts. I went past the milk bar, the BB service station, 7-Eleven. I said, "Oh, stuff you, Anthony, I'm going anyway," you know. He wouldn't have a clue. And I still, you know, it's funny they don't show the race enough, actually, BM. Not, you're the expert here. I don't think you'll ever, ever see a field like that in the Cox Plate ever again.
No, there hasn't been one. No.
Not one of those horses, you told me, there was 14 right. There wouldn't be one that weren't multiple Group 1 winners, was there?
Exactly right. Yep. And you swept down the outside at 40 to 1. And he saved that race because Naturalism went over. He was odds on. He fell. It was carnage.
And Super was a superstar.
Yeah,
you know,
he saved the race.
Great old champion, and he saved you and made everybody happy, made me more happy. I was trying to get on Let's Elope. I was slinging the kid at the concierge at the Southern Cross and putting notes under the door to Bart, and he wouldn't get back to me. And then I was at a barbecue with David Price on the Thursday and didn't have a ride. And then Lee rang me. I said, "Yeah, well, I've got to have a ride." And when I hung the phone up, David Hayes rang me. And he said, "Can your ride better loosen up?"
Yeah.
Well, those days, loyalties were the be-all, end-all loyalty. And I said, "Look, you wouldn't believe it. I just hung the phone up and we've got to ride Super." Nowadays, they jump on and off. But and as luck would have it, the cards fell my way. Only through a very, very good ride of mine, BM.
Yeah. No doubt about
and
that.
And I used to salute you every time I
you
come
did
back
too.
And went.
Yeah, I used to love
many,
that.
Yeah, the little Tim would be up there when he was 10.
That's
and
right.
All. Yeah.
They were good times.
They were to the days, weren't they, mate? Times
Greg,
have changed, though, haven't they?
Yeah, they have changed, but great to catch up with you. You're looking good. You're on the right path. You've got a good lady here in Rhonda. You're up here at Kangaroo Flat, outside Bendigo. You're out of the big smoke, which is probably a good idea.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, it's funny what they say, BM. They say you end up where you started, and I started up at Mildura when I was a kid, and I'm halfway back there. So it is great to, you know, as much as I enjoyed it and love the city and all that, it is great to be here. And Rhonda's got a business called A New Me.
Okay.
It's actually called A New Me.
That's quite amazing.
Want a bit of Botox or anything?
Yeah, I need Botox. Good to see you, pal.
Good on you, mate. Love yous all. Thank you.